In this season of Modcast, we're getting up close. Really close. We'll put humanity under the microscope and look at how things within us, on us, and around us influence our personal and shared experiences. We'll consider what drives our responses to touch, to humour, relationships, and our environment, and look at how our connections with machines will augment and enhance our lives into the future. Get ready to go deep as we bring you Modcast Season 4 up close.
In this episode, we will be exploring the power of touch and intimacy. Touch is the first sense we experience when we are born into the world, and there are few sensations that are as rewarding, terrifying, or as fundamental to humans as the act of sharing intimacy. Navigating touch, closeness, and intimacy is complex, but it's those elements of life that are at the core of our relationships and where our potential for health and happiness thrives. I'm Elise Graham. Join me in this thought-provoking episode of Up Close, Us Touching, and Us and Other People. Have you ever thought about touch being a language? As humans, we use touch as a sense to interpret meaning from each other, a way to express emotion and bond with one another. And each of us have a different comfort level and boundaries around touching. Touch is often entwined with intimacy, but it's complex. Let's look into it.
There's different levels to intimacy and what you're wanting. So I think you can have physical intimacy, you can have spiritual intimacy, or you can even have environmental intimacy. So having someone come into your home, that is a level of intimacy that you are kind of engaging with that person. So for me, it's about allowing people to come into vulnerable spaces and reciprocating that as well.
That's Dominic Guerra. He is a Nurundjeri, Kaurna, and Italian person who co-hosts the Aboriginal Sexual Health Podcast with Sasha Smith. He's a budding artist and has spent years working in both community-controlled health organisations and non-Indigenous NGOs. Dom says there are so many ways that we can interpret intimacy, but for a moment, let's explore pleasurable touch.
There's like a pattern that we're expected to fall into when it comes to sex, and I think that the best intimacy and pleasure is when we kind of explore outside of those and not follow that pattern. I personally think that there's a lot of influence from things like pornography, and that instead of showing and exploring the full breadth of human sexuality and human interaction, it's actually kind of boiled it down to kissing, oral, penetrative sex, male orgasm. And it's like, no, there is so much more. There is so much more to sex and intimacy. And in fact, I challenge people to like think about having sex without penetration and think about what that can look like and how you can pleasure each other without doing that type of stuff.
It's important to acknowledge that this form of physical intimacy is about consent, acceptance, and respect. Moving outside the realm of touch and intimacy in sexual relationships, Sasha and Dom told me about what touch means to them when it comes to friendships and family.
I'm a hugger, and that's something that we had to kind of like negotiate when we first started becoming friends, because you're not really a hugger. And so like I just kind of reserve hugging people for when I haven't seen someone for a long time. Mm-hmm. If I see Sasha 3 times a week, I don't always expect a hug. But if I haven't seen Sasha for a month, then I'm like, we're going to hug.
I don't think that it's that I don't like touching. I think it's just like I have anxiety. So I'm a very anxious person, and that kind of stops me from like engaging with like, you know, hugging friends or whatever. I have had friendships in the past where there has been no hugging or anything. So then when I do meet someone who's like very like touchy, it's like it takes me a while to get used to that. Like Dom said, it's important to communicate that when you're meeting new people and, you know, see where they stand with that.
Entering people's personal space can be awkward to navigate. It's important to be honest about who you are, what you think, and how you feel in order to share reciprocated enjoyment. Intimacy evolves best when there is mutual vulnerability and understanding.
My mom, I remember her telling me how she had to consciously remember to hug us as children because my grandmother was stolen gen and was growing up in orphanages and foster homes where she never was hugged. So my grandmother never learnt that behaviour to hug her 12 children. So my mum can't think of a time when her mum hugged her as a kid. Then when my mum had my sister and I, she said she had to like be very conscious about showing love through the physical touch with her children and hugging us. And she had to kind of teach that to herself. So like, it shows how trauma interplays with this and how that becomes intergenerational. And here I am, a hugger. So my mum broke that. But it was a very deliberate effort.
That's similar with me as well, because I didn't grow up with a lot of that. And with my younger cousins, I'm just constantly like telling them how much I love them every time I see them, just because I know that me and my cousins and my parents didn't have a lot of that. So yeah, constantly making sure the younger cousins know and trying to mend that.
How we learn to use touch, how comfortable we are with intimacy, and how we even communicate what we want and what we need are complex. Sometimes that means deep and serious conversations with your family and friends to get what you need. But it can also be approached in a lighter way, with humour. Have you ever been on dating apps? Are you ever discouraged by the notion of just swiping people's pictures as a yes or a no, purely based on their appearance? What if we were to try something different? What if we were to share something that actually reveals a lot about our true personalities?
It's common for people to say that they're looking for someone with a sense of humor. And I thought, why aren't none of the dating apps that are very popular right now taking advantage of this? A lot of the research that I was reading was suggesting, you know, they're starting to find empirical evidence of how important humor is in a long-term relationship, especially. And I just thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting to create more of an artistic experiment around this idea? One, to raise just this idea that perhaps appearance-first apps are not necessarily the best solution to finding a romantic partner, and that wouldn't it be more interesting and maybe more fun to see whether or not we would match based on our types of humor.
That's Laura Alcorn, a humorist and artist from Portland in the United States, speaking about her project, The Humor Quiz.
Imagine you connecting with someone, and instead of maybe asking cliche questions or things like that, that you would actually play some sort of humorous activity together based on the types that you like and see if you can create shared humor together. And what that means is like, you and I could create inside jokes together, or we would have some shared references that only this person and myself would understand, and that we go out of our way to keep creating these humorous thoughts or inside jokes together, and that that is really a reinforcement of our intimacy or our love or our caring for each other.
Having a sense of humor is often considered an attractive trait and a positive characteristic to find a mate, not only romantically, but platonically as well. But what adds up to compatibility?
Humor is so culturally specific and contextual to a moment, a comment, a situation. And we really evolved to use humor in our social interactions as a signal of whether or not, one, it's safe to be around another person. So when you joke around, you're sort of signaling, you know, I'm an okay person for you to interact with, and I have no ill intent towards you. But further than that, I mean, if you are laughing together, you're laughing about something, and it's up to each person to be able to deduce what is it that we're laughing about, and do I agree with that? So that's how it's really signaling your beliefs. And obviously, if someone says something in front of you and you're like, that's not funny, you don't necessarily further engage with that person. Honestly, we're attracted to people who share our mindsets to a certain degree, or some of our value systems. That is one of the facets of attraction. And so I think humor is just a bit of an evolved shortcut to determining whether or not someone is interesting to us to be drawn to.
So humor is obviously a powerful tool in identifying potential relationships, initiating them, and cultivating intimacy. But what about the long term, when the honeymoon period is over and your partner has heard those jokes a few too many times?
In long-term satisfaction, what most of the scientific studies have found is that it's this idea, again, of this ability to share laughter together, that you're creating it with one another. It's not just that you're watching another form of media and laughing at that. It's that you're actually creating these moments together, these inside jokes, and that when you're spending a lot of time with someone throughout your life, hopefully, that you're finding more and more ways to show this person how much you care for them and how much you love them. And humor is just one of those ways that we do that. I think it might also be around this idea of coping with moving through life. So, you know, you're going through something difficult. Can the other person support you in the way that they can make you laugh or can make you laugh through a difficult challenge? Can they help you in that respect? To me, that's a very intimate and very important aspect of a relationship and one of the things that humor can support in a relationship.
So you've taken Laura's humor quiz. Where do you go from here?
I think the one aspect that I wanted to make sure came through is that it's really important for people to meet each other face to face, that it's really an interpersonal interaction that allows you to move beyond just witticisms through text exchanges. And also there's just an aspect of chemistry in meeting someone and creating that laugh together. It's important that you're maybe in person.
Whilst Laura concludes that her idea of intimacy is connected to interacting face to face, some people, particularly those with disabilities, need to interact with the world differently. So whilst an able-bodied person might value their physical interactions, it is important to understand this is not the only way to share intimacy and interpersonal relationships. In a world that's enduring a pandemic, society is now starting to understand the reality of isolation and restrictive access. This is something that a disabled person may experience every day. Ableism exists in the assumption that we all interact with the world in the same way, and it inhibits our consideration for the livelihoods, access, and relationship needs of disabled people.
As a disabled and chronically ill person who requires people to do things for me on a one-on-one level, intimacy is something that comes up a lot for me.
That's Pony Horseman, an interdisciplinary artist who creates experimental works in the formats including poetry, theatre, fashion, writing, sound performance, and much, much more.
There is a disabled activist. She's like an organiser of transformative justice as well as a speaker on disability issues, Mia Mingus. She came up with this term, access intimacy, to talk about the one-on-one intimacy that happens when someone understands like your access needs as a disabled person and is able to give you access. It's not necessarily is only something that trained people can do. Like, often just because someone's trained as like a disability support worker, it doesn't mean they're good at access intimacy.
Intimacy through therapeutic relationships is not the only version of connectedness and closeness for people with a disability. Intimacy in friendship and relationships is just as important.
I spend a lot of time just on social media. I find that that's the way that I engage with other people who experience similar things that I do. We see a lot of internet friends who are interstate or across the world, the idea of not needing anybody and just needing yourself is not true. Particularly in my experience, just being so isolated because of being chronically ill and disabled, I get to connect with other chronically ill and disabled people who are also isolated as well. And it's like I get to still have that even when I'm not able to leave the house.
The online world and social networking gives people an opportunity to connect with like-minded others and build relationships and community. The importance of this in the disabled community goes even further than that, providing a platform for people to seek supportive advocates and information.
So many things that I've learned from just engaging online with the disability community is like how much effort other disabled people put in for each other and their like different access needs to each other. It just feels like they're always willing to just try and centre access and include people. You know, it's something that we can work towards collectively. The myth of independence, we're not independent, and that's not a bad thing. It's okay to need other people.
As we've explored some of the huge benefits the cyber world can bring to individuals, let's delve deeper into the notion of online interactivity and other mediums that offer community and opportunities for learning, like gaming. Susanna Emery is a game designer whose current project is focused on inciting social empathy.
It's really kind of a dating simulator, but the subversion of a dating simulator that focuses on the idea of dating and relationships and getting what we need or what we want and different perspectives on that. So that idea in society where we all try and get what we need or what we want, but what does that mean for other people?
Susanna uses the unique gaming environment to create an opportunity for people to interact and learn from experiences that we may not be able to access in real life.
In game design, empathy is really, really important because we've got this idea of something called social empathy. And what that means is basically when you incite social empathy in somebody, it makes them want to do something or change something or make someone's life better. So it's kind of like an actionable form of empathy. Social empathy is the most powerful form of empathy because it changes something or drives something forward. And to incite social empathy, a lot of the research says that the best way to actually do that is through personalized narratives or personalized recounts or experiences that help people relate directly to somebody who's in that experience or has gone through that experience.
Susanna says there is power in engaging people to think differently on social and gaming platforms that doesn't always exist in the outside world.
I think that there's so much that we can do with game environments that we struggle with in the real world. And I know in the past I've had mental health issues and I know other people who have. They found a space in the gaming community or in online games that maybe was difficult to find at that point in their lives in the real world too. As well as that kind of direct way that mental health that we can support with game development, there's that community and that opportunity to collaborate and to connect with people that maybe might be difficult in other situations.
As we've heard through this episode, there's no one way to experience intimacy. How we respond to touch is based on our experiences, our abilities, upbringing, and influences. The important thing is that we communicate and ensure that we feel safe, respected, and supported. Thank you for joining us here at Modcast for episode 2 of the 4th series, Up Close. We can't wait to talk to you next time in episode 3, Us and Machines.
Us Touching and Us and Other People is one of 4 episodes in Modcast Season 4, Up Close. This episode was produced by Elise Graham. Our series senior producer is Sarah Martin from Radio Adelaide Podcast Works. Thanks to Dominic Guerrera, Laura Alcorn, Pony Horseman and Susanna Emery for their insights in this episode. Thanks also to Deanna Newchurch, Lisa Bailey, Claudia von der Borch, and Natalie Cafora for additional series support and resources. Our theme music for this series is Hedda Gabler by Belinda Jellett, played by Zephyr Quartet. Modcast Season 4 Up Close is presented by Mod at University of South Australia and is linked to an online exhibition which you can find at mod.org.au.